Thank you all for coming. You might be wondering why we're in such a big room. This is a national security issue. We're supposed to disperse throughout the room. You didn't do a very good job. We have to minimize our targets in case somebody enters in during this presentation. My topic today, I want to thank Phil for inviting me to speak. There are a lot of speakers who could cover this topic well, and I appreciate getting the invitation. I'd like to thank my co-authors, David Nielsen with the USDARS at Akron, Colorado, and Alan Schlegel with Kansas State University at Tribune. Much of what I know about water use, I was trained as a weed scientist. Much of what I know, I learned working with David and watching David's work, so I really appreciate him working with me on this. We're going to talk about crop management strategies for low water availability. The Great Plains is characterized by highly variable precipitation. There was a geographer, Warren Thornwaite, back in the 40s, who described the Great Plains as an area of persistent drought interspersed by seductive periods of rainfall. We get these periods, you can see one back there in the 40s where we had a stretch of real wet weather and you could get along and do a lot of things, and then we drop off and we get dry again. So our average is about 410 millimeters in that part of the country. Akron, this data is for Akron, but you can see that average is made up of a lot of numbers far off from that average. So kind of an average of extremes. And that makes farming and farming decisions difficult to make. Basically, what we're going to discuss here are some of our different strategies. We really have two major goals in our low water environments. They are to maximize total water available to the crop. We want to get as much water to that crop as we possibly can, and then we want to maximize that water as transpiration by minimizing soil evaporation. Colleague Bob Klein would say, take the E out of ET. We want to put as much water through the plant as we can and not lose it through evaporation. We have a number of strategies we use, six or seven here that I'll go through in today's talk, ranging from summer fallow down through flexible fallow, which is not a unique idea, but one we're working on in the central Great Plains right now. So let's get started with the different topics. Summer fallow is really a risk avoidance strategy. Didn't really have a lot of fallow in the Great Plains until the 1930s. And most people know the 1930s, we had the Dust Bowl. Had a period of about 10 years of drought, and that's when summer fallow really started to increase. And it's to avoid those years. They used to crop annually, but they had lots of disasters. They couldn't get the crop established, or the crop never yielded anything. And so to try to even out yields from year to year, they went to summer fallow. It's not necessarily a profit-maximizing strategy. You give up yield on all the ground you fallow. If you're in a wheat fallow, you're giving up yield on half your ground, but the idea is to ensure production on the other half. It's the application of the non-uniformity principle. This principle, which you might see once or twice throughout the talk, is used quite a bit in low rainfall areas. The idea is to concentrate available water in space or time to exceed the threshold for crop response. So you need at least a minimum amount of water to get some yield. You want to make sure you have at least that amount of water available. And sometimes you do this over time. That's the case in summer fallow. We're collecting water basically over 2 years to grow 1 year worth of crop. You can also see it in row spacing, where you kind of collect water over space rather than over time. What's happened in fallow over the years is we've moved from a very tillage intensive system of managing summer fallow to one where we rely primarily on herbicides. What that has done is allowed us to maintain residue on the surface, reduce soil erosion, but also increase the percentage of rainfall that we can store in the soil. Back in the early 20th century, they did multiple tillage operations creating a dust mulch. They wanted to insulate the wet soil underneath from evaporation by creating a mulch of soil. Fallow efficiencies during that time were less than 20%, so less than 1 inch out of every 5 that fell during the summer fallow period was actually stored in the water or in soil. The rest was lost to evaporation, weed growth, runoff, deep percolation, a number of factors, but it wasn't available for plant growth. In the 30s, and through the 60s, we got away from dust mulching, went to conventional tillage, plows, reduced number of tillage operations, not necessarily to create a dust mulch, but still burying a lot of residue. We got the precipitation storage efficiency or fallow efficiency up around 25%. Then in the 60s, we started bringing in stubble mulching or non-inversion tillage. So we left the residue on the surface, but we still did some tillage there, and we got it up to about a third of the water that fell being stored. And then back in 1979, Dr. Greb estimated that with reduced tillage, using a little bit of chemicals and a little bit of tillage, we could get it up to 40%. Not sure we really ever made it to 40%. Even with no-till, we can't consistently store as much as 40%. The next slide will show some data from Akron, Colorado, from David Nielsen. And this is looking at precipitation storage efficiency during summer fallow. It's broken into three different periods here. The first summer fallow, so if you're in a wheat fallow rotation, it's the right after wheat harvest. And then we have the fall, winter, spring period. And then we have the second summer period, and then this is a summation of the whole fallow time through here. Yellow bars are no-till, red bars are conventional till. And what we see in the first summer, the soil surface is dry, so it's very receptive to the rain that falls, and we have a fallow efficiency of between 20 and about 35%, depending on whether you're conventional or no-till. We also have hot weather at that time, so we get a lot of evaporation going on. But during the fall, winter, spring, temperatures are low. Our soil surface is still rather receptive to taking on more moisture. And so our fallow efficiencies during this period actually get quite high. In no-till, we're up in that 80% range. No-till is still down around 30%. But look what happens in the second summer fallow period. Now we have a soil surface that's wetter after coming through the fall, winter, spring. We're back to the warm temperatures, and our fallow storage efficiency is quite low during this time. And there really is no difference between conventional till and no-till during this period. And if you look over the whole time, even with no-till, we're still below 40% storage efficiency. So more than half the rain that falls is lost. Not very efficient, but sometimes it makes a difference between having a crop and not having a crop. But we're looking for ways to improve that efficiency. And one way to do that is through crop rotation. If you already have your soil profile full by the time you come out of that fall, winter, spring, why go through the summer where you're not storing much? Why not plant a summer crop? And so many growers have inserted a summer crop. In our area, it tends to be things like corn, sunflower, proso millet. If you go a little lower elevation, you get grain sorghum to grow there. But what that does is it replaces soil evaporation with crop transpiration. So that increases your efficiency of precipitation use because now you're moving that through a plant rather than trying to put it in the soil. And it also reduces the risk of total crop failure because now if you have some event that wipes out your wheat crop, you still have a summer crop to rely on or vice versa. So crop rotation is another way of improving soil water use in this environment. If we look at some precipitation use efficiency data, this was generated by David Nielsen. He measured precipitation use efficiency as dollars per hectare per millimeter. And that allows us to bring in lots of different crops, forages and grain crops and grains of different value. What we notice here is that the efficiency, precipitation use efficiency is lowest with our wheat fallow systems. As we reduce the amount of fallow, add corn, or go to a wheat corn millet or wheat corn pea, our fallow efficiencies go up. And to really get quite a bit more fallow efficiency, we have to go to almost continuous cropping. These are opportunity crop systems. OC1 is one where you use about 70% of the average precip when you're making your predictions of what's going to happen and make your decisions. And OC2 is assuming 100% precipitation. But you can see we have winter wheats, wheat, corn, forage millets, wheat, corn, and OC1, and we have corn, millet, peas, wheat, sunflower, corn in the OC2. So rather intense farming out there, but it does increase your water use efficiency when you do that. So one of the things we're trying to do in our part of the world is trying to increase the intensity and reduce the amount of summer fallow that we use in order to do that. Another idea that we use is by selecting the right crop and or cultivar. This is critical to the success of dryland farming. We want to pick crops that make the best use of predominant rainfall. In our part of the world, We get most of our rain in May, June, and July, so we want to find a crop that utilizes rainfall during that period of time. This slide shows the months along the top and bottom, a few different crops. This blue section is when we get consistently get most of our moisture. The red area is the flowering and grain development period, so we want to try and get that flowering and grain development, which for most phasic crops or grain crops is the critical time to get rain. We want to have that fall in this blue or as close to the blue as possible. And so we try to select from crops that will fall in that area. Winter wheat is a major crop in our area because it does fall into that time slot. The other thing we can do is select crops that use more or less water and rotate them accordingly. This slide, again from David Nielsen, shows crop water use in dryland systems. The bar shows how much water is used on average. The little bars above and below show the range of use over that period of time from 1998 to 2005 at Akron. And basically what it shows is your longer season crops, wheat, corn, sunflowers, use more water than your shorter season crops like millet or proso. Or if you were to take corn for silage, which is that CS bar, red bar, you're cutting down the amount of time the crop's growing, you lose less water or use less water. And if you go to forages, you use less water. Most crops at full growth use about the same amount of water as any other crop. The real determining in how much water it uses during a season is how long it's growing. So by using forages out there, not letting it get to that grain stage, you can use less water. So you can balance length of season. You can do that within a cultivar. You can select a shorter season cultivar, which will tend to use a little less water and have a little lower risk. Now you also give up some yield potential if you happen to have one of those good years. But it's a strategy that can be used to minimize risk. And that's the whole concept of risk is something every grower has a different risk level that they're willing to accept. Some people I have a grower who's made lots of money selling yak or breeding stock for llamas is what he did. So he's not risk averse at all because he's got large pocket to fall back on if he has a bad year. And over a long time, he might come out pretty good. Another grower has to pay the bank every year. He's got to make sure he cash flows and he can't take on as much risk. Crop density is one other thing we use to manage water use in our low water environments. Low plant densities have some negative connotations. They can increase evaporation loss because you have an open canopy, so you have more evaporation from the soil surface. However, it does maximize water available to each plant. It increases photosynthesis and evaporative demand per unit leaf area. And it's really the only strategy that allows a long season crop or cultivar to complete its life cycle. If you've got a long season crop like corn and you plant it at 30,000 plants to the acre in our part of the world, then you're probably not going to get much of a crop. So we do manage crop density to deal with our water. High plant densities take advantage of good rainfall seasons. If you have good moisture in a given year, you'll wish you had more plants out there generally. So it's kind of up to you to figure out how frequently you are going to have those good rainfall seasons and what your risk levels are, or willingness to take on risk. And then a lot of plants will help you reduce competition from weeds, also leaves more residue, which minimizes some erosion potentials. But crop density is something we can work with. Back in the 90s, late 90s, I did some dryland corn. The farm bill changed, or growers could plant something other than their base wheat acres. They wanted to grow corn, but they didn't know what population to do, so I did some field work. 1999 was a wet year, and I didn't have high enough populations. I still have a straight line up. 2000 was a drought year. I didn't have a low enough population. We were still going straight down from low to high. So we went to Australia and did a little modeling with the APSRU group in Toowoomba, and this is the results of that modeling. We had different plant densities, 2, 3, 4, 5 plants per square meter. That's 8, 12, 16, and 20,000 plants to the acre. And we had different moisture levels, 160 millimeters at planting versus 240. That's about 240 is pretty much a full soil profile. 160 was two-thirds full. And each one of these bars then shows we ran 48 years of historical weather data through the model. And these bars encompass all those. One quarter of them fall within the white area, one quarter of the results in the orange, one quarter in the yellow, and one quarter in the white. And then this black bar between the orange and yellow is the median. And what we noticed is as our populations increase, those bars get bigger. So basically, our range of results change. If we get a good wet year, having more plants out there really helps us out. If we don't get the rain, having more plants out there hurts us. Your median changes, we found that at two-thirds full, we had our highest median at 3 plants, whereas at a full profile, it was just slightly better at 4 plants. The real benefit we see also from this is when you start with a full soil profile, while your medians didn't change a whole lot, you lopped off a lot of those low-end yields. So it kind of protects you from the low end using that soil water planting. So that's a feel for how population can affect how your crops yield. And again, it falls down to, I have some growers who know that high populations will hurt them in the dry years, but they want to get a high yield, and so they are willing to roll the dice and plant the higher plant populations, and sometimes they win and sometimes they lose. Planting pattern. This is something else we can manipulate, another strategy we use. Uniform spacing of plants provides the shortest time for roots to reach the stored soil water. It's the preferred spacing if your crop relies primarily on in-season rainfall. You want equidistant spacing of your plants in that situation. But in drier environments where you're relying more on stored soil water, non-uniform spacing of plants can often help. It restricts early crop growth. You put more plants in that wider spaced row, they compete with each other early on, limits early vegetative growth. The roots take longer to get out to the water that's out in the wide row area, and therefore can't access that water until later in the grain fill period. And this is what we do when we're relying a lot on stored soil water. We've done some skip row corn work. We had 23 locations over 3 years in Nebraska, Colorado, and Kansas. I'm just showing some of the data here. This is for skip row corn, plant two, skip two. We're in 30-inch rows, so we'd plant two rows and then we'd skip two rows. This slide shows the corn grain yield difference with skip row planting pattern in megagrams per hectare with planting every row. So if plant two, skip two was exactly the same as zero, this yellow line should fall right along the zero line. It doesn't. What we have is at lower yield levels, plant two, skip two out yields the plant every row, and at higher yield levels, keep doing that, plant every row out yields plant two, skip two, and it crosses that zero line at about 75 bushels or 4.6 megagrams per hectare. So if you're in an area with lower rainfall where that's kind of your yield threshold, if you're there or lower, the skip row planting will help you. If you're above that, you'll probably be hurt by skip row planting. Soil fertility is another thing we can work with. Crops limited by nutrient availability use water more efficiently, but in dry land area, it's kind of a challenge because if you get too much nitrogen on, you get excessive early growth. If you get too little on, you have low but stable yields. And so what tends to happen is you apply a conservative amount early, and then you assess your crop partway through the season. If you have a good year, you add some more nitrogen. And if you're not having a good favorable year, you don't add the nitrogen. This is some data from Akron, Colorado again. On the x-axis is the crop average crop water stress index, and then the different lines represent different fertility levels. And what you see is when the stress level is low, you're better off at the higher nitrogen levels, and when the stress level gets high, you're better off at the lower nitrogen levels. And so just gives you an idea, you can get carried away with nitrogen. It's not like in some wet areas where you just put it out there and you're pretty sure you're gonna get utilization of it. Real quickly then, flexible fallow is just a dynamic cropping system. It's not a totally new concept, but we've moved it over into our dry land area. Basically, we did some early work with some crops, and we looked at the dry matter correlation 12 weeks after planting. We found a very good correlation with soil water at planting and how well yields or dry matter correlated. But when we got the grain yields, the correlation fell off for our longer season crops, but was still pretty good for our short season crops. And so we're looking at using soil water at the beginning of the summer fallow period. If we have good water, we'll plant a short duration crop like spring triticale for forage, and we're getting a pretty good representation here. The reason we want to do that, we don't want to use a lot of water up because our wheat following wheat yield is implicated or affected by how much water we have. And this continuous rotation where wheat, corn, millet, where we don't have much water at wheat planting, our wheat yields are hurt. Where we have fallow and more water, our wheat yields are benefiting. So we're trying to take advantage of that. So in summary, we have two basic goals we want to accomplish: maximize total water use available to the crop and maximize transpiration by minimizing soil evaporation. And these are some of the strategies we use when we do that. I don't know if I have any time for any questions.
We can take one quick one.
Yes. No. Gotcha. Any questions? Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Drew.